You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It is Tuesday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. We'll be talking more football today in the show, but I feel like the big story we got to talk about to kick things off is Shohei Ohtani and the deferral he has in his contract now, which I believe brings up a huge issue in baseball, and it's been an issue for a long, long time. If you missed this, this almost baffled me. I actually thought at one point it was from a fake account, a fake Jeff Passan account, really, because this just, it's unfair, really. So Shohei Ohtani, over the weekend, signs the richest deal in American sports history. Like, Lionel Messi, what did he make, Jake? It was like $555. I think that's what his contract was with Miami something.
It was a weird, because it wasn't, that's not all straight part of his contract.
Yeah.
Because they had Apple money involved and Adidas money involved, and the MLS, very few people, including people that are deeply involved with the MLS, understand the salary cap within the structure of the MLS. It's strange and weird, and you have designated players, and so the number was like 550, but that was also included with, he got Adidas money within that structure and Apple money.
Yes, so a lot of it is, you know, coming from different outlets. Players like Messi, players like Ohtani, they can have that flexibility because also you think about endorsements. You go in the soccer world, whether it's Messi, whether it's Ronaldo, whether it's, you know, David Beckham, you know, there were endorsements involved. You look at the NFL, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he can take pay cuts in certain areas because he's got so many commercials, so many ads, so many endorsements that he's got more money coming from that than his actual contract. But what Shohei Ohtani did, basically gave the Dodgers a free pass to make him one of the most underpaid guys on their team. And then down the road, 10 years from now, when his contract is up, they're going to be paying him for 10 more years.
So I'm taking it from your tone. You don't like this.
No.
I love it.
I mean, I think it's what's so, here's why I'm mad about it. Because yesterday I'm seeing all these big name, you know, national writers say, well, every player is allowed to do this. You know, this is a great move by Ohtani. I mean, what's stopping any other player from doing that? Because they don't have endorsements like Ohtani. Ohtani's probably still making millions and millions from ads. Yeah,
$50 million a year is what the report is. Like, through other endorsements, he's going to make $50 million next year.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a great, you know, financial decision for him. This is like, when I'm done playing, I'm going to make the bulk of my money.
I'm going to make $680 million.
I'm not going to be hurt. I'm not playing the sport anymore.
It without interest, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's when I read about this yesterday, I was like, hey, man, if the Major League Baseball doesn't like this, then they should have done something about it. Because I imagine this is why they were so tight-lipped. And everything was so close to the vest throughout all these talks and all these negotiations with Ohtani and his agent. And, you know, that whole thing, man, they're popping bottles, Ohtani and his agent. But his agent, you know, smart dude, because I don't know if you read about this, and I don't want to get too far off the topic, but how they created a fake flight to Toronto.
Yes, I did see that.
They floated out the aisle. Well, you only offered 600, you know, we might be getting 650 from Toronto. We're going to go out there and listen to them, and then, like, bam, fake flight, here's $700 million. So it's this whole saga, I guess, the Ohtani saga has been fascinating to watch. And it's like you thought it was done, and then yesterday this kind of unfurls. And it's like, hey, man, I look, if you're a fan of small market or anything that's not what the top five or six big organizations in baseball, then it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because this is going to give – I mean, but look – the Dodgers have had the ability to do this kind of thing without having Ohtani because they just go out and pay whoever they want.
Absolutely.
Right.
They've got four Hall of Famers on their team already.
Right. And so it's like they're doing this already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this just kind of gives them and look what the Yankees just did by going out and getting Soto. And it's like these teams, it's a problem with baseball, and it doesn't look – I mean, there's – probably it's never going to change, but it's also kind of cool why you watch other organizations. They have to find creative ways to compete, through scouting, through developing young talent, through making good trades by, moving on guys and taking, rule five guys. And it's just like there's different, and that's what's so fascinating to me with baseball. It's like there's so many different avenues to get to. I'm not talking about avenues like the Astros, like banging on trash cans avenues.
Yeah.
But in terms of how you manage your 40-man roster, it's fascinating. But it's just like, baseball, it's the wild, wild west. I mean, it always kind of has been the haves and the have-nots, which was kind of awesome why you living through 2014 and 2015. Small market, but like they made the right trades. They moved off of Greinke, and acquired the right players. And they, in the James Shields trade, when they traded the best young player in their organization and they got James Shields, which changed the culture of the clubhouse. So it's like, when I read this, I'm like, man, good on the Dodgers for figuring this out because it's unheard of. It's like nothing we've ever seen ever before in baseball.
And, it is, I think the common comparison would be like, oh, Shohei Ohtani joining the Dodgers. It's like when Durant joined Golden State, building this super team. But Shohei Ohtani's coming from a team that never gave him a chance to compete in the postseason. So I'm sure at this point he's fed up going, okay, I want to get to the postseason. And if I sign this $700 million contract and I tie up the Dodgers for 10 years, does that mean that I'm going to have any other luck than what I saw in L.A.? Now, obviously, we know the Dodgers last year, an incredible team. They didn't make it that far. They lost to the Arizona Diamondbacks, who had a very low payroll. Like, to me, when Ohtani signed with the Dodgers, one, it wasn't a shock. I was not blown away. Like, the Dodgers and the Blue Jays felt like the two front runners for him. When he goes to the Dodgers, I still thought, this is a very top-heavy team. This has Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani, Will Smith, and then a lot of, I'm not going to say Jags, because they're still talented guys on the roster, but like Miguel Vargas is playing shortstop. James Outman is still a very young player. You've got Chris Taylor in the outfield, and might I add, their pitching isn't that good. Right, Dustin May can't stay healthy. Walker Buehler can't stay healthy. Clayton Kershaw is almost 40, and they have to re-sign him. There's just a lot of problems pitching-wise with the Dodgers, which is why I thought, even with Ohtani, this doesn't just lock in they're going to be the World Series winner. Because I once thought, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman on the same team, that's a shoo-in to be a World Series winner. They still haven't. Right? They still have not won the World Series, and that's the beauty of baseball, too, is that it's never a lock, right? Very few times has a team dominated from start to finish, won the World Series. The last one I can remember was 2018 with Boston. They won 108 games, I want to say it was, just ridiculously loaded team, and they beat the Dodgers in the World Series. But since then, we've seen a lot of different winners. We saw the Nationals win in 19. We saw, who was it in 2021? That would have been Houston. I know Houston beat Philly in 22. I'm blanking on 1 year in 2021. Somebody beat the Astros. It was Atlanta. Okay, Atlanta was the team that I don't think everybody was predicting. And then you go to this past year, right? Everybody thinks, oh, Atlanta and that offense, they're going to roll through everybody. They didn't. They lost to Philly. And then Philly plays Arizona, and it's, man, Philly's going to stomp on Arizona. Didn't happen. Right? We thought Houston was going to stomp on Texas. Didn't happen. So this doesn't just guarantee that baseball is ruined. I do think the issue here is that with this offseason, right? Ohtani saying, I'm making $700 million. For the next 10 years, you will just pay me $2 million a year. So the payroll is completely opened up for the Dodgers, who already spend a bleep ton of money, right? So they're going to be in on Yamamoto, the top free agent pitcher left coming over from Japan. They're absolutely in the running. It was already reported yesterday they are aggressively pursuing Yoshida Yamamoto. So I'm looking at that saying, okay, they add Yamamoto. What's stopping them from signing Matt Chapman to play third? What's stopping them from signing Cody Bellinger? Like, this Ohtani deal, winning that sweepstakes, should have been the big move. Like, as much money as the Dodgers have, that was going to tie them up because they're getting the best player who's ever played the game. They shouldn't then get pick up the best pitcher. Now, I don't believe Yamamoto's going to sign with the Dodgers. I really don't. I think that the Mets and the Yankees are the front runners for them. But baseball, I think, has a problem. And here's the thing, too. Like, I'm not going to be this fan that cries just because my team is a small market team. They don't spend that money. But baseball has also never put limitations, right? Of course, you need a lot of revenue coming in from a TV deal. You need to have good attendance. But we have seen in baseball, there's nothing stopping you from spending a lot of money. If you've got an owner that feeds the GM tons and tons and tons of money, they can go make things happen. It's not always the most successful recipe here, but I would say that at the end of the day, the no salary cap gives you some flexibility. But at the same time, the no salary cap means those big spenders, the big market teams, they could go give somebody an 8-year deal worth up to, let's just say, $340 million. Right? Let's say they go make a move like that. That's like a equivalent to the Royals signing somebody to a 2-year, $20 million deal and moving forward. Right, that's kind of what I see it as equivalent. Whereas if the Royals spent $340 million on one player, they're not only tied up that offseason, they're tied up the year after that and the year after that. And that's why I think baseball has a little bit of this problem. Now, I'm not faulting Ohtani for what he did because, A, he didn't break any rules. That's literally in the free agency discussion, the rules, everything laid out there. They didn't break any rules, right? Players don't do this because you could have, what is it? I mean, you could have had $70 million this year. He could have had $70 million for the next 10 years. What Ohtani's doing is taking $2 million, which by the average standard of a human is enough to get you through a year. So $2 million for the next 10 years. For the next 10 years, the Dodgers will pay him $20 million total. Then after that, the next 10, $68 million. When he's done playing the game, talk about Bobby Bonilla here. He is going to make nearly $70 million for 10 years when he's done playing for L.A. So that's the difference here, right? I know it's a 10-year outlook here. So what Ohtani's doing is he's saying, I don't want to make $70 million now, because he's already going to make, millions and millions through endorsements, right? He's going to make about the same as he would have made with the $70 million, but it is a big difference. And players don't do this because they don't have those endorsements, right? You look at somebody like a top player that's not the superstar status. I was going to say Juan Soto, but that's superstar status. Let's go with Jose Ramirez of Cleveland. Jose Ramirez of Cleveland has a big-time contract right now, and he re-signed with Cleveland a couple years back. Royals fans know him as a true Royal killer. J-Rom can't take that deferral because there's nobody in America, and I would probably argue back in the DR, that has billboards and everything of Jose Ramirez everywhere. So if he takes a deferral, he's not getting money from anywhere else. Like, if you go back to Japan, or you take a trip to Japan, whether you're from there or you're not, if you go to Japan, Shohei Ohtani is not some star. He's a megastar. He's a god in Japan. Like, if you thought Ichiro or Hideki Matsui was popular in Japan with their poster on a subway, the Got Milk posters, that is nothing compared to what Shohei Ohtani is over in Japan. Because not only was he the best player to ever play in Japan, he's the best player to ever play in America, and we will never see another player like him again. So money coming from Japan, money coming from America, you can take that deferral, but at the same time, you'll get the Dodgers, and it's like, why do they need this help? You know, why do the Dodgers get to have the best player who ever lived for five times here on the payroll? He'll make $2 million this year. The Royals are paying Hunter Dozier $10 million this year to not play him. Five times more money than what the Dodgers will give Ohtani. Now, here's the catch, right? That in 2034, that's when this thing kicks off. In 2034, the Dodgers, though at that point, I mean, they're probably having tons of revenue because they looked at this as Ohtani for the next 10 years is going to have sellout after sellout after sellout. They're going to be in the postseason.
Their TV deal.
TV deal, jersey sales. Like, that's why it's genius, because 10 years from now, you're not worrying about 10 years from now. I mean, who right now is thinking about what their baseball team's going to look like the next decade? Nobody is. And they're going to pay him to not be on the team anymore. But they're going to have so much revenue from this current era, and they're going to be able to go sign superstar after superstar, hopefully get for Ohtani, I don't know, three or four World Series titles out of this. Like, that's why he's doing this. And I do get the frustration from fans out there going, well, this is ridiculous. I mean, think about Arizona right now. They just got to the World Series, and they're thinking, man, we feel good about our future. We just signed our ace in Eduardo Rodriguez. The pairing was Zach Gallen, Brandon Pfaadt. You know, we've got a good bullpen. We've got Corbin Carroll. You know, we've got Alec Thomas in center. We've got Christian Walker. You got a young core piece around there. And now the team you beat in the postseason goes, yeah, we're just going to add Shohei Ohtani for $2 million. Like, the Diamondbacks had to basically gamble on Corbin Carroll before he made it to the big leagues, give him this 8-year deal before he takes a single up bat in the professional league. And that was a gamble they took, because what is Arizona? They're a small market. I know Phoenix is a bigger city, but they're nowhere near where L.A. is. Think about the Giants. Think about the Padres, who just unloaded Juan Soto for prospects. They're not getting deals like this. And that's why it's the Dodgers. It's like, it's their game. The Dodgers are who the Yankees say they are. You know, we used to for years say the Yankees treat Major League Baseball like their farm system. You know, if there's a small market team and they've got a young star, they're probably going to be a Yankee at some point. Right? I even remember back in 2012, it was Rex Hudler's first year in the booth. And the Royals were at Yankee Stadium, and Rex Hudler said, basically along the lines, that Salvador Perez would look good in pinstripes one day, and Ryan LaFever, like, went off on him. And he was like, you can keep thinking that, you can keep, and Hudler kind of stumbled back in what he was trying to say, but that's the mentality, is, well, this guy's going to look good in pinstripes one day. It's not that anymore. It's, this guy's going to look good in the blue and gray one day, because the Dodgers just get who they want. Like, it is incredible that a team in the same city, and in fact, I would say more of an upscale area. You know, Anaheim's in Orange County. Lots of money coming in. I mean, there's Desperate Housewives of Orange County over there. Like, there's tons of money going into Anaheim, and even the Angels were like, we can't pay him. And the Dodgers were like, why don't you just drive your car down the street and come play for us in the Chavez Ravine? Like, it's the Dodgers just do what they want. But I would say, you know, even with Mookie, even with Freddie Freeman, even with Kershaw, the stars they've had in the past, this never was a possibility. Because baseball, as we know, and baseball is my favorite sport, in season, like right now, I'm one of those sickos. It's like, you get crossover season right now. I love it. I'm a huge football fan, huge basketball fan. I'm like, kind of longing for the days of summer baseball here, even with the Royals coming off a 106-loss season. But the thing is with me, is the Dodgers are doing things that I believe baseball will kind of look at and go, maybe. And I don't have any trust in the people who run baseball. But to me, a salary cap might need to be put in place here, because it really is the only way this is prevented again. Now, you could also look at it and say this is a one-off, because Shohei Ohtani, I mean, this is the best player who ever lived. We're not talking about just some star here. Like, if the Dodgers went and signed Yamamoto, for example, who we've never seen pitch in the big leagues yet, only over in the Nippon League in Japan, and he came over and said, well, you know, I'm making good money over in Japan. You know, give me a 10-year deal, but I'll only make $1 million the next couple of years. Like, that's a different story here. Because then the Dodgers could theoretically do that with any free agent. But Yamamoto's not the star that Ohtani is. And there never will be another star like Ohtani. So if you're worried about deferrals, nobody's really going to do this again. Unless, you know, look at Bryce Harper. We at one time thought Bryce Harper was a megastar to be. And he was a megastar. But baseball's not as popular as football here. Right? In the NFL, you couldn't do something like this because of the salary cap. You're not giving somebody baseball money. So for sports in America, you look at what Ohtani did. Like, this really is something I don't know if we'll ever see again.
Probably not.
Unless...
Because, one, guys are too selfish.
Yeah.
Like, I mean seriously.
They want money now.
Yeah, I want it now. I want to start making money with my money. I'm not going to take $2 million. But also, back to the point of it makes it possible because of how much money he makes on endorsements. I mean, that's why this is possible. I mean, it's, you know, just to put it in perspective, like LeBron James, the highest cumulative earning in the history of the NBA, $479 million over his career. And Shohei Ohtani is going to make $680 million in 2034 to 2042.
Yeah.
So in a 9-year period, like,
I mean, he'll get to sit back when he's all done. You know, he's a decorated player, I'm assuming. I mean,
he might not be done in 10 years. I mean, we've seen guys.
Yeah. Well, I think one part of his game will be done. I think by the time he gets 40, he's not pitching.
I don't think he's pitching by the end of his career with the Dodgers.
No. I think he will. You know, it also wouldn't shock me, too, because we've seen, you know, superstar Japanese players do this. It wouldn't shock me if, like, after his deal's done, he goes back to the Nippon League. Just because, you know, with Masahiro Tanaka, different story. Tanaka struggled at the end of his career at the Yankees, went back over.
Finished his career over there.
You know, Ichiro even, I think, signed like a tiny deal to go, you know, finish up when he was 44, 45. Like, I think that would mean a lot to him because we know with Shohei Ohtani, he takes tremendous pride in being from Japan. That he even said, like, winning the WBC title over America was the highlight of his career, which when you play for the Angels, you're not playing in any meaningful games. You're not playing in the postseason. Now he gets that. But to think that when he's done playing, right, and he could have a couple more MVPs, a World Series title or two. If the Dodgers don't win any in this 10-year stretch, blow up the franchise.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I was just about to go there. It's like how much pressure this puts on the Dodgers now. Like, because if you get 5 or 6 years into this deal and he hasn't won it by year six, like at all, like think of the pressure that will be on the unbelievable. I mean, especially the guys around him. Like, it's going to be crazy to watch.
And, you know, it does remind me a little bit, when you go to the NBA, like, the pressure that LeBron and the Big Three had in Miami when they first went there.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, they lost game one.
Mm-hmm.
They lost their opening game. And then remember, they lose to the Mavericks and Jason Terry and Dirk. And you know, J.J. Barea and guys like that. Like, it can happen. And baseball, really, when you think about it, it is so unbelievably hard to win a World Series.
Look at the Mets last year. How much did they spend? Like 340?
They had the highest payroll.
Yeah.
And they didn't even make the playoffs.
Right. Like, so, I mean, like, this can completely backfire. Mm-hmm. Just because this opens up the door for these mega deals to happen underneath Ohtani playing with the Dodgers, like, it doesn't guarantee them anything.
Mm-mm.
Like, and that's, like, it's super, it's a lot of fun. And that's why it's, like, great, like, more pressure on them. Awesome. This will be even, what a great science experiment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of fun, like, opposed to him just making $70 million next year or over 10 years, $70 million. Like, this is a whole different wrinkle, only time will tell. Was this really, you know, was it, look, the dude's still going to make $700 million.
Yeah.
So is it worth it or not? Like, it's at least going to be fun to watch with this experiment. Like, who else do they bring in and what kind of pressure's on that front office? And do guys want to come into that kind of pressure? You know, I don't know. I mean, if I was a pro, I would love to play with Ohtani. I mean, what a freak baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing we've seen before ever, but, you know, Babe Ruth, but not even at this level. Like, that's...
No, he is... You know, I really do believe that you look at a guy like him. Like, it's... If you were explaining what he does, he literally sounds like he was created in a lab. I mean, he's one of the has one of the fastest sprint speeds in all of baseball. He throws 100 miles an hour with like a 94 mile an hour split, like five different pitches.
Yeah.
He's got a tremendous slurve, a slider. What doesn't he throw, basically? He can win a Cy Young. Oh, and by the way, he can hit 45 home runs, driving 120, WRC plus north of 160. You know, he has a war alone, right? The funniest thing about having war with Shohei Ohtani, like, you just factor in one thing, like just his offensive skills, he's the best player in baseball. That's not even factoring what he does on the mound. And you put all of this together, which is why I say, again, you can hope for another Shohei Ohtani. There's never going to be one. This is such a freak, a unicorn, that doing something like this, it is kind of like you said, a science experiment of what you can do. But right now, as the Dodgers are, their roster, like, I wouldn't even give them the best odds of winning the World Series. I really wouldn't, because they're so top-heavy, and still the thing that derailed them last year is still a massive problem. They have no pitching.
Yeah.
Zero pitching. And pitching, I might add, that can't stay healthy. Right? In game, I think it was game four against Arizona in the National League Divisional Series, they were throwing Lance Lynn. Like, that's where the Dodgers were at. Whether you have Ohtani or not, that's a massive issue, which is why they're going to be gunning hard for Yamamoto, for Blake Snell, for Jordan Montgomery. They're going to be trying to find their ace and not really rely on, hey, let's bring Clayton Kershaw back on a one-year, $18 million deal at age 40. Okay, as good as Kersh is, that can't be your ace, right? This is Ohtani took this deferral so that you could go buy a rotation. Now, this lineup... You get through the first three guys, it softens up a little bit. You know, you get through Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani, if you can, without any damage, which is not very likely. You're running into Will Smith, who's still very good, James Outman, Chris Taylor, Miguel Vargas, Jason Hayward. Like, this is just a team that has a way to go still. But, yes, Ohtani's made this a lot easier because, like I said, the Royals are going to be paying Garrett Hampson this year, their super utility guy, $2 million. Ohtani's making the same. Now, 10 years from now, he'll be one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid player in all of baseball, making $70 million a year. It's truly ridiculous, but you know in baseball, anything is possible.
Well, I don't know if you, I'm curious to get your comments on your level, if there is any concern. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ohtani is coming off surgery.
Yeah, he's not pitching this year.
Right. And so, I mean, is that any concern? Like, I mean,
he's had it twice, too.
That's,
like, he's
that's
had
the second
two
time.
Injuries. And I think almost the Dodgers, you know, knew the fact, and the Blue Jays did, too. You're paying what could be. I think baseball always does that.
Yeah.
You know, people always
potential.
Say, oh, you overpaid for this guy. It's like, you have to.
Yeah, yeah. The last the years 7, 8, and 9, you're not getting what you're paying
it.
For in right now.
I mean, Texas, remember they spent $500 million in the middle infield, Marcus Semien and Corey Seager.
Yeah, Seager.
Right? They're not worried about what the team's gonna look like in 2027. They wanted a World Series championship. They wanted an MVP or multiple time All Stars. They're getting that right now. And if they're terrible and eating up a lot of money in 2027, they can say won a World Series. If the Dodgers win a World Series this year, Ohtani doesn't pitch, and let's say he never really pitches that level again, right? He can't stay healthy, his velo's down, you know, but you're still a really good offensive player. Like, no, he's not worth $700 million, even if he wins another two MVPs here. But the thing is, with me, that's just baseball. You overpay. Like, whoever the Royals sign here, whether it's Marcus Stroman, Seth Lugo, Michael Walker, Jack Flaherty, they're going to overpay. For anybody that says, oh, you overpaid for so-and-so, you have to in baseball. And the rules of it, with no salary cap, that's why you overpay. It's why in the NFL and the NBA, you don't always see overpays, because there's limitations. In baseball, there's none. And I think Shohei Ohtani exploited that very much so, with deferring north of $680 million from his contract, and won't be paid significantly 10 years down the road, until 10 years down the road. But good for him. He wants to go win a World Series. He's going to have a really good chance to do that in L.A., this time with the Dodgers. We'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, let's recap what happened on Monday Night Football, and once again check up on the AFC playoff picture. The Chiefs, theoretically, are still in the hunt for the one seed, but should we even talk about it anymore? We'll tell you next on ESPN Kansas City. We are back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. You know, this is going to be a weird analogy to use, and I don't know why I'm going to, but I will anyway. You know the line in Brokeback Mountain where Jake Gyllenhaal says, you know, I just can't quit you? Like, I feel like that's Chiefs fans and the number one seed right now. No matter how bad things get, we keep revisiting this same damn conversation every single week. Like, we have our rants, we have our frustrations on Monday. Then by Tuesday, it's like, well, this is still a possibility. This still can happen. Right now, I'm not all the way there. I don't know how you can look at this team right now and say, yeah, they're going to win out and other things are going to happen and they'll grab the number one seed and Mahomes will never have to play a road postseason game, it appears. But last night, I think, is really opening up the door. And this has been a reoccurring theme in Patrick Mahomes' career. Other teams in the AFC simply do not take, you know, control of this conference. They find ways to blunder it. Now, Baltimore this year has done a good job. I don't think anybody is looking at Baltimore as they're choking things away. They're 10-3. Had a late game-winning drive from Lamar Jackson and won in overtime 37-31 over the Rams this past week. Like, that is a team that is trying to take control. But Miami almost had the chance to solidify last night. The Chiefs were not getting a one seed. The Chiefs would have to win out, and both teams ahead of them would have to lose two more games. And Miami didn't look like they were going to lose two more games. But they lose to Will Levis and the Titans last night after leading by 14 with less than, what was it, 3 minutes to go? A rookie quarterback on the road. Miami chokes it away. And this is why I think it becomes a scenario where the Chiefs just need to get in, which is going to happen. Let's be honest here. We're not really worried here about not making the postseason. The Chiefs play four backup quarterbacks over the next 4 weeks. Not saying those games are going to be blowouts. There's probably going to be a close one or two that makes you rip your hair out. But in all honesty, you know, with the state of the conference, it's just not that good. It's really not. Like, if Buffalo chokes and Cincinnati chokes and both of those teams are out, the betting favorite to get to the Super Bowl on the AFC side will be the Kansas City Chiefs. That's just where I believe it to be. Because I do not trust Baltimore. I certainly do not trust Miami. I certainly do not trust Jacksonville. And yes, you could say, I don't trust Kansas City. But they've also won two Super Bowls in the last 4 years. They're the only team in the conference with championship pedigree. And that is so vitally important when you're in the postseason. Because it's a mental hurdle for other teams. I guarantee you, even after teams watching the Chiefs lose to the Bills, they're saying if there is just a way the Chiefs can lose in the wild card round, just be eliminated from the get-go, we're going to feel great. But if the Chiefs get past somebody in the wild card round and then they have to go on the road to a Miami or Jacksonville or Baltimore, I'm taking Kansas City. Just because those teams have proven they can't handle this type of pressure. They really can't. And I'm still expecting Baltimore to trip up at least one more time. And why, you might ask? Well, did I think Miami was going to trip up against Tennessee? Did I think Jacksonville was going to lose to Joe Flacco, who was on a flight to Cleveland 2 weeks ago, and then he hangs 30-plus points on him? I couldn't envision any of that happening. And that's why you still, at the end of the day, can openly criticize the Chiefs, say they're not that good, they're not going to go deep in the postseason, they're not going to see tremendous competition they can't overcome. Now, let me, I guess, play devil's advocate here. No, they lose to Green Bay. Green Bay kind of beats him down. And Green Bay goes and loses to Tommy DeVito. Like, we were talking last Monday I believe it was. Jake, it was the first show where you had hopped in the chair as the producer. We're talking about Green Bay, and I'm going to say it was definitely me that said, you know, Green Bay's going to win out.
Yeah, I think we both were on the same page with that. I think we're like, yeah, that win's going to catapult them, and they have a good chance at putting themselves into the playoff picture.
And then that happens last night. And in Miami, it's like, even though Tyreek Hill goes out with an injury, like, that also exposed a tremendous flaw with the Dolphins. If Tyreek Hill can't go, Tua is a completely different quarterback.
Yeah. Look, Dak is in the lead for the MVP, mm-hmm. and I think chances are he's odds-on favorite. He's probably going to win it. But in terms of that Dolphins team, like, Tyreek Hill just solidified the fact that he's the most valuable player on that team,
yeah.
without a doubt. And Tua is not the same quarterback without Tyreek Hill. I mean, it was amazing to see that, how hard they struggled without, you know, Tyreek Hill. And it's what team, if you're looking at the playoff picture, I mean, the Ravens, right? They're the number one seed right now. But I don't want anything to do with the Bills. Like, I'd rather play the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'd rather play the Dolphins. I'd rather play any team that's currently in the playoffs right now than the Buffalo Bills. I mean, strictly because of Josh Allen and what he can do. I mean, he's on another level. Like, I'm not putting Tua there yet. And a lot of people were earlier this year, right? It's Mahomes and Allen. And then, you know, Lamar Jackson's not too far from there right now. But he's still, you know, he's still a disaster in the playoffs. You know, he's had some horrible showings in the playoffs. 1-3 record in the postseason. So, you know, it's, I mean, there's six teams that are sitting at 7-6 right now in the AFC. I mean, I think last night, I can only speak for myself, made me feel a lot better about the Chiefs' loss on Sunday. Although it did kind of suck, and I was not, I'll be honest and forthright, I was not on the DeAndre Hopkins bandwagon to get him in town. There were talks about him being a free agent and the Chiefs bringing him in, and I was not, you know, one, I didn't think they could afford him, and two, it's like, I don't know if I think he's at the end of his better days. But that dude looked like the, you know, without Tyreek Hill on the field, looked like the biggest playmaker out there last night with a rookie quarterback.
Mm. It just goes back to the point with the Chiefs. It's like, what would this team look like if Brett Veach would have just added one legitimate wide receiver, a true number one? I mean, if the Chiefs had a typical Chiefs season, the AFC playoff picture would probably be wrapped up at this point. I'd imagine the Chiefs have maybe two losses a game ahead of Baltimore, but then control your own destiny. You know, you win out, it's over. But that's just not where we're at. But it almost makes me a little bit more giddy for the postseason, because I do want the Chiefs, of course, to finish the season with four straight wins. Everybody wants that. You go 12-5, you feel good. But I almost want the Chiefs getting into the postseason, if it's even possible, under the radar. You know, I hope Baltimore crushes it the rest of the season. I hope that Miami kind of rights the ship. And it's going to sound weird here. I get people going, why would you not want the Chiefs to get the one seed? I do. But I also think this team can play better when they are doubted, when they're not expected to win that game, when they're not expected to come through. And also, the football fan in me wants to see Patrick Mahomes win on the road in the postseason. I think he needs that to his, you know, very decorated career. I think everybody does, because it shows that you can really win in a tough environment. Like, AFC title game, Patrick Mahomes has to go on the road to Baltimore, M&T Bank Stadium, and beat Lamar to get to the postseason with that wide receiver core he has. Like, that's some pretty special stuff. And right now, it feels like it's rock bottom in Kansas City. It does. We're not going to feel that way on Monday. We're not going to feel that way the Monday after that. We're not going to feel that way the Monday after that. And the last game of the year. It just feels like the AFC is always checking behind them. Always checking their rearview mirror. And yeah, you know, to use a Mario Kart analogy here, the Chiefs keep hitting the banana peel and spinning out. but they're like in third place. And they keep catching up. They get the mushroom, the triple mushrooms, and they're speeding up to first place. And even though Baltimore feels good today, 10-3, Lamar's playing well, receiving core's really good, Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham Jr., and even without Mark Andrews, like, that's another kicker here. It's one thing to win in the regular season. It is. It's a completely different thing to win in the postseason. It's one game. Like, what Lamar and Baltimore did Sunday, even what Miami did last night to Tennessee, losing, it can completely change by January. It's one game. You throw everything out, and we've said that over and over again. You're just hoping when Kansas City gets to January, it's championship pedigree that matters, not what seed you have, but it's still wide open. The Chiefs will need to win out. They will need Miami to lose one more game, and they will need Baltimore to lose two more games. Is it possible? Well, Baltimore's schedule is pretty tough the rest of the way, so they are going to have to really step up. But same thing goes for Kansas City. They're going to need to win out to try and get that number one seed. We'll take our final break of the show. When we come back, we will wrap up the show on ESPN Kansas City. We are wrapping up the show on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. Well, there was some local news in college basketball this morning, as former Kansas State Wildcat Naquan Tomlin has found a new home and will be eligible to play in the second semester. He is going to be joining Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers, who have already had some very impressive wins this year. Early on, they won in Columbia against Missouri. They also fared very well in the Bahamas tournament, the Battle for Atlantis, I believe it's called. They beat Arkansas, who was a Final Four favorite, or one of the Final Four favorites coming into the year. Much different team now, though. But they really handled business. And now they had a guy that, ceiling-wise, could be a first-round pick in the NBA. I mean, this is as good of a midseason acquisition as you could get. And I know that K-State fans are really kicking themselves for this, because I do believe if Naquan Tomlin was at any point going to rejoin Kansas State's men's basketball program, I mean, it really raises their ceiling. Now, right now, I think K-State is doing the best they can. They have looked impressive the last two games, knocking off Villanova at home in a come-from-behind win, and then going on the road to LSU and winning by 15. But I also can say that they're not going to see competition like they're seeing now in Big 12 play. And that's where Naquan Tomlin takes you to the next level. Right? Kansas State this season has played one ranked opponent, and it was Miami. And at one point in the game, they trailed by 20-something. And I ended up losing by 8. It was a tremendous fight. But you know, you'll get Nebraska coming up on Sunday, then Wichita State the following Thursday, Chicago State, who is bottom 300 in KenPom, then UCF, West Virginia, and Tech. But having Naquan Tomlin against Baylor, having him against Houston, Oklahoma, Kansas, BYU, Texas, Iowa State, it changes what you can do. Because I do believe they are missing just that true five man. You know, Will McNair and David Gasson, they don't do what Naquan Tomlin could. Memphis is now going to get that, and I think if you're a fan of the local teams here, Kansas, Kansas State, or Missouri, you do not want to run into Memphis in the NCAA tournament. They are an uber-athletic bunch. Penny Hardaway has always been an excellent recruiter. You know, talent is really starting to come back to Memphis, you know, where it was in the John Calipari days. But to me, I mean, this is just one of those things that makes you sick to your stomach if you're a K-State fan. Not only do you lose Naquan Tomlin, now you got to see him play elsewhere and almost immediately. He'll sit out these first couple weeks, get acclimated to the team, and then boom, he's ready to go for conference play. And for Kansas State, like, this is your roster now. You get Quez Glover, one of the top transfers you got back around Christmas time, I believe Jerome Tang said. But losing Naquan Tomlin, who going into the year you could have argued to be the star of that team, not having him and then him going elsewhere to play immediately, that's a stinger. That is a big-time stinger, because I am still waiting to see, you know, what K-State can do in conference play. We're going to get, you know, their first test against probably West Virginia in Morgantown, or maybe if not West Virginia, since they're sub 500 now, it'd be against Texas Tech in Lubbock. But I'm very interested. Very, very interested, because I think all year long it was, let's get past the non-conference schedule. Let's have a bulked up record, 10-2, 11-2, and then we got Naquan Tomlin coming back. I think that was the hope. Then you can take off from there. There's no need to get acclimated to the team. He's already been close with them. He's been practicing. Now you know what your roster is, and maybe that takes you out of the distraction phase. You know, players wondering when is he going to be back, coaches wondering when he's going to be back. Now you do have a set roster, and it seemed like against LSU on Saturday that they kind of used that to bond together. But now everything is official. We know where Naquan Tomlin's going to play basketball. We know how that raises the ceiling of the Memphis Tigers. And we know where that leaves Kansas State. But it has been a wild couple of weeks in Manhattan. You know, they even had some bad football news yesterday as Kobe Savage entered the transfer portal. I think they're second in the Big 12 and players lost in the transfer portal. It's a weird time, what's all been going on. But at least for the basketball team, they got a winning streak going right now. Five-game winning streak, and they have Power 5 wins over Villanova and LSU. They will be back in action on Sunday against Nebraska, who just recently beat Michigan State 77-70. But the Cats at 8-2 will take on Nebraska then, and then they will have two more games in the non-conference slate before opening up conference play against UCF, one of the new additions to the Big 12. That'll happen on Saturday, January 6th. You know, it's just, Jake, I would say one last thing on this for Naquan Tomlin. I mean, it's going to be weird to see a guy go to a different school and then immediately start playing. But, you know, how do you see this, you know, going down for K-State? Is this a loss they're never going to be able to overcome throughout the season? Or is this something that could maybe bring them closer together?
I mean, look, it could go one of two ways. I think Jerome Tang's such a good coach that I think they'll rally around this loss, I guess. Mm-hmm. You can't replace a guy like that. It's just not, that team can't, you know. And my only disappointment is they didn't end up in a Jayhawk uniform. So, but it'll be interesting. I mean, I think it's a huge loss for them, and I think it turns them into, you know, on the cusp of a NCAA tournament where I think they'll still make the tournament,
mm-hmm.
but with that talent on that team, I think they could make some noise in the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
So it sucks for Kansas State fans right now. That's a huge loss, but it's a weird situation because really nobody knows exactly what happened, and there's a lot of social media stuff. I don't know. It's weird, and I think, you know, I think the Wildcats are still – they still have a good enough team that to beat teams like Villanova and make some noise in the Big 12, but they're not nearly as dangerous with Tomlin on that team.
No. I mean, to have a five guy like that can handle the ball and play like a wing, it's tremendous to have. But now he's going to be doing that for the Memphis Tigers in the second semester. Well, there's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.